Welcome to the Lost.101 podcast, supported by our race partners, Albion and Ride with GPS. It's day five now, and our overall top 10 is complete. While for many riders, the race is on to make the final GC cutoff at the finish line in Cordoba, and just as importantly, the finishers' party. For some riders, the honour of taking that GC place is driving them forward. For others, simply completing the nearly 1,300 kilometres of the 101 in their own time has been the goal from the start. A huge challenge by any standard. And after such a difficult week on the bike, everyone's really feeling the effort now. In Cordoba, Caps 146 A and B, Johanna Drolshagen and Jon van Bommel claimed the title for first pair, coming in at 142 hours, 21 minutes. Sophie Potter last caught up with them on Parkour C.
What are the hardest hours during the day?
The hardest?
Yeah. And do you have the same one? Because as a pair, you have to manage that.
I don't know. I think for me, the mornings are the hardest. Yeah. More an evening person.
I can tell.
Yeah. If you're outside, like, the mornings are great, but it's hard
it's
to
really
start.
It's beautiful, like sunrise, but I'm just, slow tired. In the morning.
What's the plan for today?
Having a coffee in the next town and breakfast, I guess.
Yeah, I guess try to get as far as possible so we have to do less tomorrow.
Because what is tomorrow?
Well, hopefully I can wash my clothes.
Laundry day!
Yeah, so it would be nice to finish not too late.
Get your outfit ready for the party.
Right.
I guess this is the only outfit I have at the moment. So, this it will be.
Oh yeah, I did.
What's going on here? You have a tag attached to your visibility vest.
This is not the cycling vest we started with, I guess.
I forgot mine, so I bought this at the whatever, and it's still on. And it's like a medium, but I fit like three times in it, so, you know.
It's three times XXL.
Anyway, it does the job, I guess.
And you can return it after, I guess, if you keep the tag.
That's good, you can return it.
And I'll change it for some shoes.
Maybe you can give it back at the next gas station.
Yeah.
All right, we let you go to your coffee.
Thanks.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you.
In the solo race, the final places in the overall top 10 were claimed today. 7th and 8th were taken by Ariane Richter and Victoria Dessart, respectively, with the two riders arriving just over 40 minutes apart. Incredibly close after such a long race. Cap 122, Susanna Markov, came in and claimed 9th, just 3 hours later, and race director Hannah was there to congratulate her.
Oh my god!
Thank you. Can I give you a hug? Congratulations, Susanna.
Thank you so much.
Great ride.
It was much harder what I thought. Oh, it was a hard night. I rode 32 hours with 1 hour sleep and then 20 minutes sleep and a few power naps.
You've done a lot of ultra races.
I have done 4 before, but this was the first one what I really race. The other ones, I have been a little bit in my comfort zone, so I have been always sleeping the last night. So this time I was like, I decided to come as a race mode, so that's why I made it. Yeah.
Do you feel happy with what you've achieved?
Oh, so happy, so happy. Yeah, so happy.
Did you have any expectations of getting a top 10 when you signed up for the race?
That was what I said aloud. If I would get top 10, that would be my ultimate goal. And I didn't know it was realistic. And when I saw it, I'm so near. So that kept me pushing. So I made my goal.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
You did really great.
Yeah.
Did you have any highlights from your race?
My mind is so blur now that I can't say any one highlight. It was all the mountains and the views. Yeah.
Next up was Ingrid Predota, Cap 96, who came in at 114 hours in an incredibly tight race between her and Jetske Vandenberg, who arrived just 5 minutes behind. Our team were following their dots for what was almost a sprint finish in ultra terms. Aflin met Ingrid and her husband Bernd at the finish line and broke the good news.
Did you just say that this was a present from your husband?
Yes.
What a strange present.
Yeah, last year a birthday, and my husband said, do you want to your birthday? I yes, pay for you, and just no.
Yeah, we were on a 3 month cycling trip last year. We had to think about it.
Yes, and then I said, yes, I will do that.
And did you know he was going to be here at the end?
Yes.
You knew he was here
you
waiting
knew he
for
was
you.
Waiting.
Yes. This distance is very long, and I'm alone. The first, I'm really alone. The all competition we have together, make together. But this one was the first one that I make this by myself. And so I'm so proud of myself.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
Well done. And with it being your first longer race, where you have to start thinking about like your sleeping and how your strategy goes throughout the whole race, how did you find that element of it?
I research a lot on the YouTube and the internet, and I train very hard. My training was 6 months, I think, but I won't make it in time. That was my competition. But now, one day further, and I don't know what places I know.
We're in plenty of time, and I can tell you your position now.
The first run?
You're 10th. You've
so
got
crazy.
A top 10.
It's so crazy.
Congratulations.
It's the first time. It's so crazy.
And your ambition was just to finish by the finish party.
Yes.
That's incredible.
Yes. Thank you.
You're an athlete.
Do you feel like an athlete?
Thank you so much for this event. It was crazy. But the parcours was very hard.
Here's Ingrid's husband, Bernd.
Can I ask how you feel?
Yeah, crazy. I mean, I knew she can do it. I believed in her. We have some cycling experience, of course, not ultra cycling, but we know how to find food on the route because of our cycling trips, and we know how it is to be outside all the time and deal with the bad weather. But, I mean, this is a different beast here, so I'm very, very proud of her.
Cap 72, M. Wilson, was one of our Mike Hall bursary riders, not only taking second place in the non-binary and genderqueer standings, but also 20th overall, all while riding their cargo bike. Absolutely epic work. Here's M, reflecting on how the 101's focus on flinter cyclists changed the atmosphere around the race.
Yeah.
Does it feel, now that you've done this race compared to some of the other races you've done, what's the significance of this being a flinter-specific race?
It was really, really empowering to see so many strong flinters riding, and there were some really, really strong flinters. And just the support and the vibe and the care for each other and just, you know, the competitiveness, but not in a ego way, like in a nice way.
Yeah, someone was saying that they, on a race where it was mixed genders, they felt like really excited overtaking men, but on this race, every time they would overtake someone, they were like, hello, sorry. Which I thought was actually really telling of the atmosphere.
Yeah, I had that as well. My first few flinter only like gravel such races, I was sort of like, oh. Gotten used to that, but I think this was the first time that on a race people didn't comment. Like, I've been told, oh, you look a bit, I know, wobbly on the bike by men, or you know, it was the first time I was just, you know, left alone or complimented and not, you know, given unsolicited advice or criticized. So that was really nice.
For the mid pack, the finish was now within reach. But with many still over a day away, the race wasn't over yet. At least for most, the Portuguese rain was now a distant memory, and the warm Spanish sun was cheering things up. Here's Robin Bodeman, whom we last met on night one, fixing the first of what turned out to be many punctures. Robin had a simple reward waiting for them at the finish line, as they told Sophie.
If you could see everything or have anything on the finish line, what would it be?
Usually I have these mental pictures for a long time of something I dream about, and it has been a cappuccino for a very long time, that just for hours I was writing, seeing this coffee in front of me. But now actually I don't have anything. Maybe an ice cream?
Okay, that's achievable, I think. How do you feel about, are you excited or are you like, I wanted to get it done?
I think I'm excited. I think I still feel very, like I feel good. But I'm also slowly like, that's also why I want to ride through the night. I'm like, oh, not another whole day. Now it's also time to arrive.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to let you finish that absolutely giant sandwich. Yeah.
I was also surprised. Maybe I put it on my aero bars to finish it.
Yeah. Any more flats since I saw you?
No. I bought, like, I was so scared of ending up again, and like I was in this horrible situation that I couldn't patch my tube because it was pouring rain and there was no shelter. So I was like for 40 minutes trying to make it dry, and then I was like, no, I need stuff. I got new patches, new tubes, and now I still have everything because, of course, I'm going to carry everything to Cordoba. So I had too many punctures in the first 24 hours. I got so grumpy about it. But now everything is fine.
Cap 66. Monika Samolska was really feeling the distances hitting now.
Do you recognize me?
Yes, although I'm not in as high spirits as I was yesterday.
It's all right.
This was hard.
What was hard?
This parkour, getting to it.
But it's beautiful. We've been
up
there.
It's all beautiful, but it's so hard.
Yeah. What's your plan now? So you're eating a sandwich. You have a bench next to your bike, but you haven't seat. You're eating your sandwich.
I'm having a few bites and I'm heading. I am finishing to the, in this ride, if it kills me. I just want to be done.
Yeah. What do you want on the finish line? If you could have anything on the finish line, what would it be?
My partner is in Cordoba. I just want to see him.
Cap 45, Emily Beicheng, took us on a bit of a transcendental trip through their endurance mindset yesterday. They'd slept more, but had another reason to be a little bit more awake.
Oh my gosh!
Oh my God! Are you in some sort of rush? You've been...
I want to get to Cordoba.
Yes, I can tell that. You've been smashing that uphill.
I've been so sleep deprived the past 2 days, and I was feeling pretty bad, and then I slept 6 hours last night. It's like I'm going to change up my strategy. And I think it worked because I actually felt good on this climb.
Yeah, it's incredible what a few hours of sleep can do.
Yeah, yeah, I was like, actually 3 hours a night does not work for me. I'm going to do 6. I got stung by a bee yesterday.
Oh no.
And I was on this big descent and a bee just lands on my arm and stings me, which is so rude. And I couldn't take my hands off the handlebars because I was on a big descent. So I just watched it sting me.
Oh, no.
And then watched it slowly pull itself out, and there was like this sticky material coming out of it, and I was yelling and cursing at the bee. I called it many bad names.
won't ask you what are those names.
Yeah, and I couldn't do anything because I was descending. Yeah. It's like, you know when you get vaccinations and some people like to watch the needle go in? I just watched the bee sting me. And then I was yelling so loudly because I was so frustrated.
Here's Cap 93, Lizelle Kemp, who Sophie found whispering sweet nothings to her bike Ruby, hoping to bring the ride home.
Yeah, this is Ruby. And
your bike?
My bike. And in between I thought, I don't know if we're going to make it, but then she stopped doing noises.
Do you talk to her?
Of course. She can talk too, but if you don't hear it, it's not, it's your problem.
What do you think she will tell you now?
She said, let's do it to the end and then bring me to my mechanic. I have a very good mechanic at home, and I told her, I think like Ruby is really worn down, and she said, ah, come on girl, come home and I care for her and you do the race now. So then I said, come on, we just have to do this now and then we go home.
Would you in your normal life talk to your bike or?
Yes, always.
Okay.
This is Ruby. At home I have Susie. This is my first, was my first, yes. And they carry a lot, are?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, they do.
There have been times on the 101 that a lot of riders have said they've found it hard to resupply and to get enough food in. Cap 90, Fiona Burkhart, didn't have that problem. Sophie found her well-stocked.
How many hours of food do you have? Oh, like, how much food are you carrying?
Yeah, way too much. Look at me, I think I just told it to my...
To be fair, yes, you have a lot of stuff.
Exactly. It's, I don't know why I keep on buying things, because I feel like it's a super rural area and then there's not so much to buy. And I want to start early and then the first cafe is coming in like ages. But then I'm just too kind of too lazy to eat things. And then I carry it with me. It's horrible. And then I don't want to throw it away because I'm like, you never know if you need it. And actually sometimes I keep eating things from 2 days ago because I'm like, now is actually a good time to eat pastel de natas or whatever from Portugal. So yeah, and now I'm like, this is even still from Germany. So I'm also carrying stuff still from Germany.
So it means that what you're eating now on day 5, it's what you've been carrying for 5 days on your bike.
Partly, yes.
There is no judgment there. Huh? It's just to be clear.
No. But I think, I feel like for that, I'm not too slow. Let's put it like that.
All right, I'm going to let you finish your... delicious gel from Germany.
German gel.
Sophie met Cap 64, Jessica Notzing, again today up on Parkour C. Unfortunately, this time she was feeling pretty rough, but still determined to get to the finish.
Oh no! We saw your bike, so we stopped, but I think it's not the best time for you. I'm sorry.
I think I might have got food poisoning.
I feel pretty rough. The view here is already
quite nice. Oh, it's incredible.
Nice.
I'm going to get to the top, even if I have to vomit all the way up.
Did you eat something bad?
Yeah, I think so.
Sorry, that's kind of obvious. But do you know what it was?
No, I've had a sandwich. I had a rice bowl from the Mikado. Can't be that. I had a sandwich. I'm blaming the sandwich. I'm so determined to get to the finish. This is going to sound really corny, right? My granddad died 5 weeks ago, beginning of April. He was 93. He was a bit of a legend. He was like, he looked after me when I was a kid, and just a really, really nice man. And he loved me doing this. He thought it was great. And he used to watch Dot Watcher. I think he was probably the only 90-year-old that ever like logged onto Dot Watcher. I was a bit humming and ahhing about doing it, and then I was like, oh fuck it, I'm gonna do this and try and do it in. Finish with my granddad, so I don't care if I have to vom and poo my entire body across Spain. I'm gonna get to the end, like genuinely gonna make it, because I really want to for him. I'm really sad that he's not here to watch me do it, but there you go.
He's probably there.
He's up there watching instead, my grandmother.
Parkour D took riders to the top of Pico Viejas, the highest peak of the Sierra de Viejas mountain range, and standing high above the monastery of Saint Maria in Guadalupe. The most direct route to the top of the parkour involved an incredibly steep climb, a bit of a cruel twist at the end of a long few days in the Portuguese mountains. That being said though, a lot of the riders on the parkour seemed surprisingly cheerful, given the fact that most were pushing their bikes up to the top. Race director Andrew describes the parkour.
Can you describe the parkour, Dee? because you are the one who chose it. So why did you choose that insanely steep climb?
So it was actually Hannah and Taylor who recce'd this part of the route. But
it's their fault then.
It is arguably their fault. But they can also claim the credit for the views, because we're standing at the top of the parkour, where there's this sort of decommissioned weather station right at the top of the mountain and an old helipad. And if you go all the way up there, you can look around in a full circle and see hundreds and hundreds of kilometers in every direction all across the Extremadura. And it's the prominence of this mountain that really sort of stands out. There are smaller mountains around us, sort of big geological anticlines, which is like a ridge line of rocks sticking up, heading off into the distance. And they, although they are tall, are so much smaller than this mountain top that we're on, and it just gives you this amazing, awesome sense of scale as you look around, especially with the clouds casting shadows all over the landscape.
Thais Jansen, Cap 58, was one such rider pushing up to the top, their bike having Campag road gearing that wasn't really suited to loaded riding. They were, however, in a good mood, and Sophie had a quick chat with them as they headed up the parkour.
We are on those really, really steep climb. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us what is the ratio on your bike, on your gear?
No. No, I have a root ratio with heavy legs, so
yeah,
it's a bit too low.
Because you are a track, how is it called, like a track?
Track cyclist in the winter, so I'm used to pushing very hard. But of course, I cannot change for this race for the cost of the Campagnolo group set. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's like that. I knew that I would climb this by feet when I saw it, but okay. All the rest is passing.
If only you didn't had the road shoes.
Yeah, well, I didn't put my cover. I hope they're still, because I have the cover with me.
Oh, yes.
But I didn't put them, no, so I hope don't have to exchange one cleat. I have one.
Oh, then you're fine. You're fine.
For the pilgrims of the Camino, their journey is as important as its destination. The physical challenge, immersion in the landscapes you pass through, and also the social connections along the way, is as much the purpose of a pilgrimage as its holy destination. Cap 115, Susan Heidecker, was reflecting on the experience of riding the 101 and how sharing in that experience with the other 101 riders added meaning and community to the journey.
I pushed up the bike to the... Now, what is the mountain called before Guadeloupe? Okay, you don't know,
yeah,
but...
I know the one.
And I was just thinking, like, why the hell do even people want to go up here with a bike? Like, what am I doing? Whatever. And then I was right at the peak and met Rosa, who now just came to the finish line just a couple of minutes after me. And it was really nice because so far everything is sort of, you do everything in sort of a hectic. So you try to be like always fast and stuff. And there we were both so bummed out from this like massive hike, or massive, but like it was like a 3 kilometers hike a bike session, or at least I couldn't ride it, so like I had to push my bike. And so then we were up there and actually took a moment to enjoy the incredible view, and I was like, okay, I get why the race organizers wanted us to go up here, but in between I was thinking, like, this is already a hard race, now we're making it like incredibly hard by like taking the most mad stuff in the mandatory parcours.
It's also nice knowing that like that moment was just by coincidence shared with someone else as well.
Yeah, it was really nice that there was someone else up there. But in general, the whole time on the route, there was a lot of fun to run into other riders, because it reminds you from time to time, oh, I'm part of something. I'm not alone here. It might be like really hard right now, but like it means something. Although I think for the outside world, it's kind of hard to understand why the hell you would do something like that. But it's like these little short chats in between that makes it like just like a short social experience. I could also just do it. Let's do it, you know.
Time for the recap of the day. So we spent the day around Parc Maudit, either on the steep climb or at CP3 just after it, where riders were all stopping to resupply. I was really impressed by how cheerful everyone was. They were all tired, but somehow nobody really complained about it. They were just dealing with it. It's not like complaining will make the climb any shorter, I agree, although in many other races, quite a few people still seem not to have received that particular memo. Two riders told me today that they knew they did not have the best setup or the best road bike for it, but it was simply the bike they already have at home, and buying a new one just for the race was just not an option. So yesterday I spoke about the bodies of our riders. Today I would like to talk about their best friends, the bikes. And honestly, there is not only dentist bikes out there, no matter how fast they are going. We have all heard Uncle Bobby telling us, without asking him obviously, it's not the bikes, it's the legs. And honestly, as painful as it is for me to say it, Uncle Bobby is not entirely wrong. Of course, there is still an advantage to riding a bike that is 3 kilograms lighter, and descending a mountain bike with rim brakes under a torrent of rain is definitely not what I would personally describe as type 1 fun. But instead of listening too much to Uncle Bobby arguing online about saving 50 grams on his 15,000 euro bike that has never seen rain, maybe we should simply look at our riders out there and get lessons from them instead. I'm Ray, rad-ass bike with rim brakes. So maybe she's the exception that confirms the rule, or maybe having slightly less efficient brakes was part of the strategy all along to go faster. Either way, her bike, her ride, felt like a beautiful tribute to old machinery everywhere. And maybe this is also an important reminder that you do not need to wait until you own the perfect bike to start doing big adventure. Sometimes you simply start with what you already have. Steel bikes, fancy carbon dentist bike, bikes older than their owners, cargo bike, tiny minimalist setups, huge setups, brand new machine next to bike held together mostly by hope, zip ties and determination. A possible kind of bike was moving south together, and that was amazing to see, because once again, ultra distance racing proves that there is never only one way to make it work. Fashion moment.
Unlock the door, lower the blinds, light up the smoke machine, and put on your heels because I know exactly what we need.
Today, Jon van Bommel, cap 145, lost her reflective vest, mandatory piece on the catwalk this season. So she made a quick shopping stop at a local ready-to-wear boutique, Repsol. What I found slightly fascinating is that she did not even bother removing the tag before putting the vest on. At the same time, the vest was so oversized, which is really not trendy this season, that she might be considering returning it for a sizing issue after reaching Cordoba. In fashion, ready-to-wear is one thing, but what I truly love is when self-taught designers take pieces from the catwalk and decide to customize them entirely to their own taste. The artist, Rosa Tercoul, cap 101, was not fully satisfied with the color palette of her jersey and bib short, and decided to completely rework the collection using a bottle of chocolate milk. It was a bold artistic direction, especially considering that this chocolate milk had also been her only source of nutrition for the past 24 hours. So it is entirely covered from head to toe in chocolate that she eventually arrived today in Cordoba to hand back her tracker. A tracker that honestly also looked like it deserved a proper shower after the experience.
You know you love me. XOXO.
Gossip Girl. Today the WhatsApp group looked less like a race group and more like a slightly chaotic travel agency, with riders collectively solving the great mystery of how to get everyone back to Cordoba in time. Did some riders fake tears after being refused by bus drivers? History will not tell. But give a complicated logistic problem to a group of flinters, and somehow, magically, solution appear. And strangely enough, tonight, absolutely everybody seems to be on their way to Cordoba, one way or another. So apparently, even scratching the race can still end in a little Spanish adventure. Frankly, those riders know how to live. We keep an eye on every dot out there, on our Lanterne Rouge and everyone in between. Tonight, 24 riders have already made it to the finish, and 25 more are within GC currently between CP3 and Cordoba. So those ones should definitely be on time for the finish cutoff. The other ones, though, let's say they might want to avoid taking too much time getting ready for the party. We are on slightly tight schedule here. Tonight, it is our last night out there, and I'm currently sitting to the top of the Pico Villuercas, watching the sundown. one thing to say, life is good. Tomorrow in Contrecoeur number 2, we will drive to Cordoba, ending our journey there, but catching riders on our way. So to the riders out there, enjoy riding your bike, enjoy the sounds of the night, and ride safe. Don't forget your visibility jacket tomorrow at the finisher party. And as I have annoyingly tell every riders I saw this week, it's going to be a party. So don't get lost tonight, and don't be late tomorrow. That's an order. Good night, and good ride, everyone.